May last year. And police forces across Europe carry out a series of coordinated raids, targeting one of the Balkan gangs flooding the continent with cocaine. Led by Croatian security forces, the raids took place in Slovenia, the Netherlands, Germany, Belgium, and Italy. In total, 37 arrests were made, 15 kilos of cocaine and 11 kilos of heroin seized, as well as weapons and fake IDs. The raid was coordinated by Europol's Balkan Task Force, which was set up in 2021 to respond to the rising power of Balkan cocaine traffickers. Europol, the EU's law enforcement agency, says their influence is significant and growing. On this special episode, we dive into these gangs, collectively known as the Balkan Cartel. We hear about their emergence from the Balkan conflicts of the 1990s and their move into cocaine trafficking in South America. How they are fueling a surge of cocaine onto the streets of Europe, helping transform it into the world's number one cocaine market. And the part played by a man nicknamed the General, who now sits in a Belgrade jail. I'm your host, Carmel Crimmins in Dublin.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
US and European counter-narcotics officials say that Balkan fingerprints can now be found on most of the cocaine that enters Europe. The ascent of Balkan gangs to the upper echelons of the global coke trade has police scrambling to keep pace. The amount of cocaine seized on boats in the Atlantic linked to Balkan criminals has increased 300% since 2015. Gabriel Stargarter, a Reuters reporter based in Paris, spent 12 years in Latin America covering drug trafficking and organized crime. He's been working on this story for months. Gabriel, thank you for joining us. Can you give us the background to your work on this story?
So I've been covering drugs and crime and violence in Latin America for over a decade, first in Mexico, then in Brazil. When I got to Brazil, it seemed like the drug story was not quite as important perhaps as it was in Mexico, but I realized that was maybe not correct, because actually Brazil had become this gateway for huge amounts of cocaine flowing across the Atlantic towards Europe. And in the time that I've been in Brazil, Europe has overtaken the United States as the world's top cocaine market, and it's growing year on year, and it shows no signs of slowing down. So in the process of writing about this new shift, I ended up talking to a lot of counter-narcotics officials based in Latin America, from the United States, from Europe, and of course, lots of Latin American ones. And towards the end of my time in Brazil, I started hearing from quite a lot of them that the big shift that they had noticed in recent years was not just the arrival of Balkan gangsters, but how Balkan gangsters taken over things, really, had climbed up the food chain and were now the dominant players in moving drugs across the Atlantic to booming European cocaine markets.
How has that been achieved?
So I think when you think of cartels, probably it all begins with the Colombians who first started moving cocaine to the United States. In that northward trajectory, they inevitably started having to do business with the Mexicans. Over time, as the Colombian cartels were attacked and brought to their knees by US law enforcement, the Mexicans kind of took over that business, and they were helped by the sort of Mexican diaspora community all over the United States who gave them retail and distribution access. But in South America, it's been a slightly different situation in that Europe has always trailed the United States as a sort of major drugs market. That has begun to change in recent years. And as part of that change, the people serving the European market have changed. What you've got is European gangsters about two decades ago migrating over to Latin America. At the forefront of this movement was the Balkan cartel, people from the, you know, former nations of Yugoslavia who got into the smuggling game after the conflict there and when peace settled on the region, moved out to Latin America. And they have made a sort of concerted bet on the region. They decided to invest time and money, and that's really paid off in the sense that they now have really come to dominate the transatlantic cocaine trafficking route.
Tell us about Slobodan Kostovski, nicknamed the General, who's awaiting trial in Serbia.
Slobodan Kostovski is a kind of central figure in this story, although he's representative of a broader trend of Balkan gangsters moving over to Latin America. He arrives probably in the early 2000s, we're not entirely sure. By 2006, the Brazilian authorities are aware of him. And he is one of these guys who's come over, leaving a very colourful past behind in Europe. He's an elder statesman of organised crime in Europe, known for bank heists, breaking out of jail, and all sorts of colourful criminal capers. He comes over to Latin America and initially starts smuggling cigarettes out of Paraguay, but within a few years, he's graduated to moving cocaine. He served a few years in a Brazilian jail, but then escaped in 2018 during a furlough and fled back to Europe. Once he got back to Europe, he started rebuilding his cocaine empire and was eventually busted again last year when Spanish and Serbian authorities seized a shipment of his cocaine, alleged shipment of his cocaine, aboard a fishing vessel near the Canary Islands. Slobodan Kostovski's criminal trajectory perfectly illustrates how the Balkan cartel have made this long-standing bet on Latin America that has paid off and allowed them to move up the global food chain in the narcotics business, and they now have moved from the fringes and sit at the very top table.
Kostovski has yet to enter a plea to the charges he faces. His lawyer, Stefan Jokic, declined to comment to Reuters. Is he typical of the type of gang leaders involved here? What's the structure of these Balkan gangs?
The Balkan cells, individual traffickers within them, have a totally different hierarchical structure to some of the Colombian and Mexican cartels, which were very much top-down. They're more entrepreneurial, the Balkans, and I would say that they have come over to Latin America almost of their own accord. Arrived in Latin America, they have created a sort of informal network amongst themselves, which is mutually beneficial, although they're not necessarily working together. They will work with each other on certain jobs and then maybe not work with each other. But ultimately, all they're really aimed at doing is moving cocaine across the Atlantic. Their initial start in the Balkan cocaine trade was based on bribing or threatening Balkan seamen who ply their trade on the maritime shipping industry. There are thousands of Balkan seamen who work on container ships all over the world, and with many of them making the journey regularly across the Atlantic to pick up South America's abundant exports, they would bribe or threaten them to move drugs on their behalf. Initially, the amount of drugs moved tended to be quite low, often in the few kilos here and there. But as time has passed, they've got much more sophisticated at it and are now moving multi-ton shipments that have shocked counter-narcotics officials. So one of the main things to bear in mind about the Balkan cartel is that there is no godfather. There is no Chapo Guzman. There's no Pablo Escobar. These are small entrepreneurial cells engaged in their own business activities who are willing to do business with anyone, with foreign crime groups, from the Italians, Israelis, Chinese triads, you name it. They'll do business with them. They'll not do business with them. They operate on their own. They're very small, tight-knit crews, very hard to penetrate and even harder to topple.
Let's look more closely at how these Balkans gangs emerged in the 1990s and where the riches from this cocaine trade is ending up. Alexander Vasovic is our correspondent in Belgrade. Alexander, the authoritarian regime of Slobodan Milosevic in Serbia and wars in Croatia, Bosnia and Kosovo allowed for organized crime to flourish in the Balkans in the 1990s, right?
The former Yugoslavia dealt with crime and even political opponents by giving them passports and opportunity to leave the country. So many of them have left the country. Many of them have developed networks abroad. During the war, quite quickly, they started cooperating on cross-border level. And when the wars ended, they simply started expanding network, they moved abroad, and they started developing business.
What type of people are they? What's their background?
There are people that have a university education, for example. There are people that have only high school. Many of them are people who started with petty crimes as teenagers and then evolved over the years. Some of them at the very beginning were, for example, children of former communist Yugoslav People's Army officers or even ranking members of the Secret Service or ranking officers with the state police.
Do we know where this drug money is ending up? Is it visible in Serbian society?
There were cases when people investigated or sentenced for smuggling or for being a part of organized crime networks were using their money to purchase real estate, establish companies, and even pose as investors. But one cannot see it on a large scale.
Alexander Vasovic in Belgrade. As we've heard, the reach of these gangs is across Europe and South America. So, Gabriel, why has it been so hard for authorities to tackle this cartel?
I think precisely because there is no godfather figure. They're very nimble and fleet-footed, and as a result, they can always stay one step ahead of law enforcement. Another reason law enforcement have struggled to tackle the Balkan cartel as quickly or as meaningfully as they might wish is that I don't think that they were even aware that they had grown so powerful. This only became apparent with the hacks by European police forces of Sky ECC and EncroChat, two encrypted channels that they managed to break into a few years ago and which revealed the vast scale and power of the Balkan cartel within the global cocaine industry.
These gangs have really looked to get a grip of the entire process then.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think the Balkan cartel made a concerted effort to dominate every part of the supply chain. They first went to Latin America, essentially in search of cheaper drugs. I think their calculation was that why am I buying drugs off middlemen when I can just go to Latin America and buy it myself at much lower prices? These were people who were not necessarily scared of Colombian narcos because they were often quite serious gangsters. And I think that they went over there and they managed to get hold of cheap cocaine. And then that gave them kind of a front row seat to the cocaine trade in that other people who maybe were a bit more worried could go to the familiar face of the Balkan gangsters and buy it off them. Secondly, they had this huge advantage with the Balkan seamen who gave them a vast maritime architecture that they could just immediately tap into for moving their product across the ocean. And then thirdly, I think the other thing that's really important to bear in mind is some of the post-conflict diasporas of Balkan communities across Europe. That what that does is it gives you a retail and distribution infrastructure. So you can really go from the Andean coke field all the way to street corner sales in Paris, London, Berlin, you name it, with these Balkan diaspora communities. And that's just made them incredibly dominant.
Is it just South America and Europe where these Balkan gangs are operating?
One interesting fact about the Balkan cartel, which explains perhaps why they've got so big and why they remain so big, is that there seems to have been a sort of conscious decision on their part to avoid selling or importing cocaine into the United States. People can only really guess at why that might be. One ex-DEA guy I spoke to said that he thought it was because the Mexicans dominate that market so well, and also the long arm of US law enforcement can come and pluck you out of your bed anywhere in the world. I think that's also perhaps a reason why they were allowed to get so big in the first place, because I don't think that without the US nexus, I don't think US counter-narcotics forces, be it DEA or other ones, are paid as much attention to them because they were just not shipping drugs into the United States. So in a way, that left them really just being chased by European law enforcement who don't have the means or budget or scale of the Americans. So in a way, I think that that's an important factor to explain their growth and their size.
Could that change?
I certainly think that if you speak to US diplomatic staff in Eastern Europe who work in, say, Serbia or Montenegro, they will certainly be very much on top of this because I think that there's huge amounts of money flowing into that region and where's that money going to end up going? In terms of the counter-narcotics officials who work on this, they're very, very well-versed in these groups and understand how important they've got. But the thing is, the United States has much bigger fish to fry at the moment, namely the fentanyl epidemic, which is really consuming a lot of their bandwidth in terms of drugs fight. So Balkan cartels who don't sell cocaine into the United States, moving huge loads into Europe is probably not at the top of their list of priorities, which is probably good news for these gangsters.
Gabriel, thank you very much. And you can read more about the Balkan cartel and Gabriel's investigation at Reuters.com. That's all for this special edition of Reuters World News. We'll be back on Monday with our daily headline show. Special thanks to Gabriel Stargarter and Alexander Vasovic. Reuters World News is produced by Kim Vinnell, Tara Oakes, Jonah Green, Gail Issa, David Spencer, and Christopher Walljasper. I'm your senior producer, Carmel Crimmins. Executive producer is Lila De Kretzer. Sound design, engineering, and music composition by Josh Sommer. If you haven't already, subscribe, rate, and review Reuters World News on your favorite podcast player. If you like what you hear, we'd love it if you shared this episode with a friend. You can also hear us every day when you download the Reuters app.